Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Your Queensland Seafood. This is Eric Perez, CEO of the Queensland Seafood Industry Association. Welcome you back to what is our fourth, and I'm hoping a very long series of discussions with people across the Queensland seafood industry. And today I have the pleasure of being joined by Artie Raptus. How are you, Artie?
I'm really good, thanks, Eric. How are you?
Good, thank you, sir. So today the discussion is around talking to our listeners and the seafood consumer about explaining a bit about your business and talking about some of those commonly asked questions around seafood that you've encountered in your long travels. And for the sake of the listeners, Artie is a multi-generational fishing industry person, so we're going to hear some pretty good stories in the next little while. So I'm going to shut up in just a moment. But so before we kick off into any recipes, and I know you've got one you particularly want to share on the podcast, can I get a bit of a sense of the business and how long you've been in the game?
Yeah, so we're just so happened to be celebrating our 50-year birthday of our business this year. So
excellent.
That's a pretty big milestone, and we're going to be having a bit of a get together, a bit of a party with all our staff and customers and suppliers and fishermen and everybody associated with our business later in the year, which is pretty exciting for us. We've never done any type of celebration like that before, but 50 years is a really long time, and I'm not 50, so I haven't done it all myself. I didn't do all this myself. I couldn't have done it all myself, but this is a family business. I'm a third generation family member. My grandfather did start the business. He was an immigrant from Greece and came into South Australia, and he started the business. He was a net fisherman in South Australia. He then, had a family, which included my father and my uncles and auntie. And then he went on to owning and operating a fish shop. And so then my father obviously was growing up and got involved in the business. And my father was very entrepreneurial. And so he was able to take all those skills of fishmongering and trading and seafood. And because my dad has such a keen interest in engineering, he decided to try his hand at building a trawler. And he was operating a trawler in South Australia. So, we were fishmongers and we were trawler operators. And then fast forward the tape to the late 70s, he convinced my mother that we would move to this really big, vibrant, beautiful town called Corumba. And my mum imagined that it was, this sort of small city, and it was only going to be 12 months. And so my sister and I, my mum and dad, we moved to Corumba in the late 70s, and it was a fishing town, and it was only like 150 people in town. And I think of the 150 people, 140 of them were fishermen, and they were crabbers and barramundi fishermen and prawn fishermen like my father. And our business, developed and grew to what it's become today. And I was very, very fortunate to, as a kid in my school holidays, work with my grandfather and my father at the same time. So I was being taught how to mend nets and do those very basic things. And then I also got to work in the factory, peeling prawns and unloading boats, and that real sort of, starting out kind of type jobs, cleaning the factory and then going out to sea and doing, trips with my dad and the school holidays. And then we then eventually moved from Corumba after my mum and dad decided that enough was enough, and that 5 or 6 years later that it was probably time for us to move to somewhere, a little bit bigger. And as my sister and I got older and needed to go to school, to high school, and so we moved to Cairns and then eventually moved to Brisbane, where I then finished school and worked my whole adult career with my father to today. And today I'm now, you know, the baton's been passed across, and I'm now the CEO of this this very proud family business with lots of staff and handling lots of seafood and operating lots of boats.
That's great. So in your travels then, and this is a question I've asked everyone I've spoken to thus far, is when you've had your chance to talk to the seafood consumer, what's the most common question you get asked about seafood?
Yeah, that's a really easy one, and it's one that always comes up, and that is how do I cook it? What do I do with it? How do I handle it? How do I store it? But the main question is always, how do I cook it? What do I do? It's just something that repeats over and over. And I'm pleased to say that I think we, as a domestic consumer in Australia, we have come a long way from, say, 10 years ago, where there was such an enormous amount of our product was actually going overseas as export product. And now there's a big percentage, a very significant percentage of product remains here in Australia that the consumers are subscribing to, wanting to eat local product, and they're looking for it. And there's a greater understanding that has emerged from the public in what to do. And it's really great to see.
Okay, so here's a question for you, and one that comes up a lot that I'm hearing, and I'd like to get your take on it. Fresh versus frozen.
Yes. So my take on it is that I've seen small local operators that work into us in Brisbane. They'll go out to sea and they'll go catching their prawns, for example. And they'll be out, they'll take a day to travel out there, and they'll be out there for a week. And they'll come back in, and those prawns are on ice. But in saying that, if it's the first day's catch, it's a week old. And so you tend to get sort of a mixture of very fresh product that's a few days old, all the way through to product that's a week old. Whereas when you compare it to product that is frozen at sea, the product has been landed on the boat, on the back deck. It's been packed in a box, whether it's a 3-kilo box, a 5-kilo box, a 10-kilo box, or whatever the format is. It's put into a snap freezer. A lot of these snap freezers these days, the technology has become so advanced that freezing times have gone from, 8 or 10 hours down to like 4 hours, and they're at minus 18. And they're snap frozen very, very quickly, within anywhere from, 30 minutes to an hour of them landing on the vessel. And then they come to shore. They then go into a coal store that's, at minus 25 or minus 30. Then eventually, when that product is taken out and thawed out appropriately, that product is like a couple of hours old. It's almost like frozen in time. And as long as it's held appropriately and it's sold in a timely manner, that product is considerably better than product that's come in on a fresh boat, on a wet boat, that's over a week old and it's already starting to show signs of deterioration. So I've put it to the test many, many times, whether it's been laboratory tests, whether it's been dinner parties, and I've done the comparisons. And I'm pleased to say that the snap frozen, frozen at sea product wins every single time.
Wow, that's you might get some debate on that. So let me ask the following question then. When you talk about appropriate handling of the product, so let's say I've gone to buy a couple of kilos of frozen prawns and want to get them ready to eat. What are the steps you would take to get the best product in that defrosting process?
Okay, so the worst thing that you could do is to try and defrost them really quickly. You do need to give yourself a little bit of time. There is a way that you can do it if you don't have time, but if you do have time, you really need to be defrosting those prawns with chilled water or cold water as opposed to warm water or hot water. As soon as you try and immerse them in hot water in the sink or run them under hot water, you're instantly going to start affecting the product's integrity. You'll be cooking them. You'll be causing them to go black. They don't stand up very well in doing something like that. As opposed to something more appropriate would be to put cold water in your sink or to put cold water in some sort of, you know, cooking container, or whether it be a pot or anything that you've got in the kitchen, and then you can put some salt, because as soon as you put prawns, green prawns or raw prawns, or even cooked prawns for that matter, in fresh water, you're immediately going to remove its natural salt content out of the product. And so the best thing to do would be cold water, some salt, any salt, you know, rock salt or just normal kitchen salt's fine. You then, and even a better step to that as well would be to put a little bit of ice in the water as well, so that the water, you know, isn't too warm. So even when you put the cold water out of the tap, often it can just be at ambient temperature. So it's best to get that water, you know, a little bit cool, and then take the majority of the defrost the majority of the prawns like that. Then, you know, you can then take them out of the salt brine and then put them on a plate, maybe with some paper towel so that the water's not going everywhere. And then you put them in the fridge and keep them cool until you want to use them. And that's really, really super important, because as soon as you take them out of the cold water and you sit them on the kitchen bench, if it's half an hour later that you start cooking them, the product itself, the integrity of the product itself, is going to start to deteriorate in the water, in the warm air. So it's important that you keep them cool. If you can peel the prawns, you can peel them, then you put the prawn meat or cutlets in the fridge. If they're going to cook them whole, you know, grill them on the barbecue on a hot plate, you put them in the fridge and leave them there until you're ready to use them. That's the most effective way to do it.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, that's tip number one. That's great. So, and it's just simple things like this that sometimes people don't know to ask or are fearful of asking. So, can I move on then to a dish you'd like to share with us? So, I know you've probably tried every seafood under the sun, but you must have a recipe that you could share with us.
I do, and I've been told by my family, and maybe it's because of my family, I'm an emotional person. I like to have emotional connections to things. I'm from a European background. And this particular dish was a dish that I cooked for my mum and dad. It was the last dish I cooked for my parents before my father unfortunately passed away. And so he did say, much to my mother's disappointment, that it was one of the best dishes he's ever eaten. And so, you know, it's not just something that I've sort of plucked out and thought, oh, yeah, this is a good one. It is very, very simple to do. It has a European flavour, because I am from a European background. Even though I'm an Aussie, I was born in Australia, I do have a lot of Greek and European heritage in the way I was brought up and the things that I ate and those cultural cues that I have. And so my dish is the called the Mediterranean fish parcel. It's sometimes called the Italian fish parcel, which is not. It's a Greek fish parcel, right?
Okay.
And so it's basically a fish fillet, and then you will include some ingredients with it, and the parcel means that you wrap it either in alfoil or in baking paper. I've found that baking paper works really, really well, because then you're not trying to scrape things off, you know, if there's a problem. Baking paper is excellent. You can then discard it quite easily. There's not too much mess. And so the premise of the whole dish is that you'll get a white fish fillet, and my favourite white fish fillet is tropical fish fillets, and specifically Red Emperor, because it is quite a dense fish and it's something that it takes a little bit longer to do, but it works a lot better because a lot of the Mediterranean fish tend to be a bit more denser white fish, like swordfish, for example, often those types of species that are cooked in the Mediterranean. But so, in Australia, yep.
So can I ask, what are the substitutes of Queensland caught fish?
Yes.
Would you substitute if you had to make a choice? Are there other substitute fish that you could use for the dish?
Yes. You want to be looking for something that is a whitefish fillet and it has not a great deal of its own flavour profiling so that it can take on the flavour profiling of what you're cooking it with. So, for example, crimson or saddletail snapper or any of the snappers that are caught in Queensland, those fish tend to be a little bit thinner and not as dense. So the cooking time's got to come back a little bit. But you can actually check it as you're going along. So, for example, with the Red Emperor that I use, often I'll just open it up, I'll get the knife, I'll just cut a little piece in, cut it into the fillet itself just to check that it's cooked through. And it's literally, it's either 15 minutes or 20 minutes. So with like a snapper, like a pink snapper or any type of Queensland snapper, crimson saddletail, it would be 15 minutes. With a Red Emperor, where it's a little bit denser or anything of that sort of nature of fish, it'd be more like 20 minutes. And so what you do is, because it's European, some of the ingredients that you use will be things like potatoes. And so with potatoes, you try and use the small chap potatoes. If you do need to use a bigger potato, you can just chop them up into small pieces and just cook the potatoes themselves in the microwave for around about 5 minutes or so, just to sort of get them going. Otherwise, when you finish the dish, the potatoes won't be cooked through. So either use really small ones or chopped up and microwaved. Then on top of that, you can throw into your little parcel fennel bulbs, garlic cloves that have been crushed, cherry tomatoes. With the cherry tomatoes, try and get really, really ripe ones so that they can sort of break down a little bit in the dish. And also you can use capers as well. The capers is for the saltiness, but you can actually have alternatives to those things as well. Like instead of capers, you might use chopped up olives. Instead of the olives, you can use anything that's kind of has a bit of a salty yep. profile, anything sort of like that. But I like to use olives myself. And then you use a little bit of finely grated lemon rind and a couple of tablespoons of lemon juice. And then you put a little bit of oregano, because apparently oregano just goes with everything European, from what my mother told me, including on including on Weet-Bix in the morning. So you'll then close the parcel up, and then in a oven at fan force at 180 degrees, you'll put it in the oven if it's a denser fish, about 20 minutes. And then you bring it out, check it, and you have a number of parcels for the number of people. And then you open it up. And then the final thing to do is to put more oregano in there, apparently, from what my mother tells me and my grandmother. And anybody that's connected to my family, you know, puts oregano on everything. And then you just put a little bit more lemon and then you serve it. And the real trick to it, to know that you've done it well, is those cherry tomatoes, which you can cut in half. They tend to break down a little bit with the heat, and the juice will go through into the fish fillet as well. And there you have it.
Oh, brilliant. Excellent. So, for the sake of the listeners, I'm sure I'll get that recipe off you to be able to publish online
yes.
for people that have been following the podcast. So, okay, that's excellent. Look, Artie, I appreciate your time. So here comes the near finale of the podcast, where I hand over to you for the shameless plug of your business. So over to you, sir.
Okay. So the best thing to do is to follow us online. We're on all the platforms. Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn under Raptor Seafood. And because we're a business-to-business type company, we don't supply into the consumers. You can find our products at pretty much all the independent fishmongers around the country. You can find our products in all the supermarkets around the country. We're a big volume business and we supply to just about everybody, all into restaurants and food service as well. But the most exciting thing to do is just follow us on social media, because we've got some really, really cool stuff we always push through, and it's really interesting, exciting. And it becomes not only about the product itself, but a lot of it's got to do with our staff and our fishermen, because they're right on the front line. And we've got a lot of interesting fishing stories about what's going on with our boats and where they're fishing and what we're doing and what's in season. And it's an education piece, as well as, you know, showcasing our business. So that's the best way to do it. And then from there, you can then navigate through to where products are and which supermarkets, which locations. And, yep, that's pretty much it.
Okay, thank you. So, Adi, I appreciate your time. And for the listeners, I'm sure we'll be able to have another chance to talk to you again for a different recipe. So maybe a crustacean recipe, something to do with prawns, or maybe a crab recipe. I will remember that it is a Greek recipe, not Italian, so I've got that particularly clear. So, look, again, thanks for your time, Adi, and for everyone listening, thanks again for joining us, and we'll catch you on the next podcast.
Thanks a lot, Eric.
No worries, mate. Thanks very much.